Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Chet Amud Aleph, 10 lines down at the end of the line. Tnan Hotam. We have a Mishnah over there, Mishnah in Zvachim, that says, Nishpach Adam al Ritzva. If the dam falls onto the ground after he shucks the animal, let's fall, and then he brings it back together. He gathers in the blood that fell on the ground, Pasul. That's no good. Now, it really should say Tnan Hotam again. There's another Mishnah in Zvachim. This is not connected. These both are Mishnayot in Zvachim, but it's not a continuum. It's not one single Mishnah. It's two separate Mishnayot, and the latter Mishnah says, Minakli al Ritzpa, if first he did the Kabbalat Adam into the utensil, then it fell onto the ground, Vasafo Kasher, then it is Kasher. So Minahani Mile, where do we know this from? Why is there a difference if he shecks the animal and then the blood falls directly onto the ground, and then he tries to gather up, that's not good, that does not work as Kabbalat Adam? On the other hand, if he captures it in the Kli first, then spills it and picks it up again, that's okay. The Tanur Rabbanan, it says, V'lakach midam hapar. So midam hapar, what do we know from that? Midam hanefesh, v'lo midam haor, v'lo midam hatamsit. So the blood that matters is dam hanefesh, the dam shanefesh yotzei ba, that blood, the life force is in that blood. So that's the blood that we want. And remember, that's the reason that we're putting on the mizbeach. It's v'dam ba'u ba'nefesh yichaper. That's the blood that brings kapara. It's also the reason given why you may not drink the blood of an animal, because the life force of the animal is in the blood. So it's a dama nefesh is what you're trying to capture. Velomi dama or, and not the blood that is embedded in the skin, in the flesh of the animal. Velomi dama tamsit. The dama tamsit is the subject to machloket rishonim, exactly what it is. The dama tamsit is either the blood before the dama nefesh comes out, or after the dama nefesh comes out, the dama tamsit is the residual blood that keeps flowing out. We're looking for dama nefesh. Then, the second limud is what's important to us here, which is midam hapar. So, dam me hapar yikablenu. So, when it says midam hapar, don't read it as midam hapar, but rather read it as dam me hapar yikablenu. So, you have to move the mem. The mem, which the Gemara is going to say in 1 second, if you said midam, that would be from amongst the blood, which would indicate that you don't have to capture all the blood, you only have to capture a portion of the blood. Midam hapar. And the Gemara rejects that and says, because we see somewhere else, we have to capture all the blood. So then what do I do with that mem? I move that mem over to the par. So I say dam mehapar, that I have to capture the dam directly from the animal. So that's what the Gemara says now. Tisakadatcha midam hapar. Midam, fafilu miktzat adam, if you thought midam apar, we're going to take literally, which means you take from amongst the blood, not all the blood, but a portion of the blood. You have to capture all the blood of the par. All the blood means all the dam ha-nefesh. Shnemar, bet kol dam ha-par yishpoch yisod mizbeach. That you have to take all the dam ha-par and place it and pour it down onto the yisod mizbeach. Ela, shma mina. So what would I conclude from that? My midam ha-par. What's the meaning of midam hapar? That it's dam, mehapar, yikablenu. That you get the dam from the par directly, you have to get the dam from the par. Vekasavar, and he's using a methodology of lima, which is gorin, o mosifin, vidorshim. Gorin means we erase, mosifin means add, vidorshim, and then we do a drasha. So here, he took the mem off of midam, he moved it over to mehapar, and from that, doresh, he's doresh that we have to take the dam directly from the par. Gemara does it in more extreme cases. Tosafot brings one of the more extreme cases where the Gemara in Zvachim takes one letter from one word, another letter from another word, and gets a new word, totally. The Gemara in Zvachim, with regards to that type of drasha, says, what type of sharp knife do you have that you can cut up the Torah and make it whatever you want? Tosafot says, how come the Gemara here doesn't ask that? I mean, this seems to be, which what you're raising the question is, what type of drasha is this? You move letters around, how do you do this? So Tosafot says, over there in Zvachim, where they're making up a totally new word, there the Gemara is a little more skeptical about doing it that way. Over here, yeah, this is just moving a letter from here to there. That the Gemara is okay with. So Tosfot sees this as a less extreme form of that methodology of drasha. It's obviously that they had a Mesorah. The Mishnayot already tell you the information, because we know that the din is such. So now we have to find the source for such a din. They're working to figure out where that drasha is from. Someone has a Mesorah about it. Now this is all a way of background. This information, they're trying to get you quickly into Zvachim and get you all the background information, which is the basic point. That if you have Kabbalat Adam directly from the animal, then you're okay. And if you spill it later on, no problem. Because it's gone into a Kli Sharet, you did the Kabbalat Adam, you spill it, you just put it back into the Kli Sharet. Because you've accomplished the Kabbalah directly from the par, so that you're done with. Kabbalat Adam, you're done with. You're now in the process of Holacha, which is taking it to the Mizbeach. So that, if you spill it, you pick it up and you keep going towards the Mizbeach. On the other hand, if you were never mekabel the dam into a kli sharet and it went directly on the floor, then you failed to do kabbalat adam. Picking it up now and putting it into the utensil is not kabbalat adam. And so now when you take it to the mizbech, you've missed a step or stage in the process, the avodat of korban, and it's no good. So you can't do kabbalat adam in that way. You can't be ma'asif it afterwards. So now here's the question in our situation. Why is that relevant to us? It's ba'ibra of papa. Again, another question for a papa with regards to chafina, which is, itpazar haketoret mimlo chofnav. What happens after he takes mlo chofnav? He takes his handfuls of the ketoret and he spills it on the ground. Mahu. What's the din now? Yado ketzavar behema dami upsula. Are his hands the equivalent of the neck of the behema? And that means that he's got to get the ketoret directly into the kodesh hakodeshim and then onto the coals, because there's no quote-unquote kabbalat adam over here. The kabbalat adam is that he puts it from his hands directly into the machta. It's possible that the kaf would be enough to get it there, and once he spills it from the kaf, it would be okay. The question of the kaf, which we're going to deal with in a second, is that the kaf is not a necessity. I mean that the kaf is only there because there's no other way to do it. So if there's no other way to do it, we use the kaf. So is the kaf really a part of the process? But assuming that the kaf is a part of the process, then you could argue that as soon as he gets into the kaf, he's okay, because then it's a kli sharet. If he spills it after that, he can pick it up. Versus his hands, do they act as the kli sharet? Are they the tzavar behema? And he's got to get it into the kaf. Odilma, ki kli sharet dami. Or maybe his hands have the status of a kli sharet in this case, because there's a lack of kli sharet here. He's doing the hopen with his hands. So they have lo psula, and it'll be the equivalent of capturing the dam in the kli sharet, then spilling. Maybe that'd be the same thing over here. The taking of the ketoret in his hands is the equivalent of the kli sharet. If that's the case, when he spills it, all he has to do is pick it up and put it back into his hands. On the other hand, if you think his hands do not act like a kli sharet, it means that he's got to get the ketoret directly to the machta. If it spills on the floor, it's failed, because now he's failed in the process of getting it to where it needs to be, to its end destination. And Teiku, Tosafot actually asks an interesting question. Now he says, wait. Before, in yesterday's daf, the reason you needed to take a spoon is because of Efshar. You need a spoon is because it's impossible for him to take the Torah in his hands and take the coals in, and then do all the avoda bifnim. He can't get the coals off his hands. How is he going to do this? That's what it says. Based on this Gemara, I have an answer to your question, which is that if his hands are kli sharet, and that what's spilled out of his hands afterwards is okay, then he could go into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, open up his hands, let the Ketoret fall into the ground. Then take the Machta off his hands, put it down, and then pick up the Ketoret again and put it into the pan, and you're totally fine. The fact that we don't do that, shouldn't that be a proof that his hands are not a Kli Sharet? So Tosafot asks the same thing he did on the previous time that he suggested one of these methodologies is, it's not Kabod Shamayim, it's not the appropriate way to do something. It's one thing if it fell, and you have to pick it up. It's another thing that every year you go in there and you drop it on the ground and then you pick it up afterwards and put it into the pan. That's not Kvod Shemayim. Then you wouldn't do it with the Pnei Melech Basar Adam. Of course, you're not going to do it with Pnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he says that's not a definitive proof either way, because we wouldn't suggest such a methodology because it's just not appropriate to act in that way. That's why we're left with the Teiku, a question here as to whether the hands are a Kli Sharet. If they're a Kli Sharet, then after that if they spill, we could just pick it up like the Dam. Or the hands are not a kli sharet, and you have to get it either into a kli sharet, which is the spoon, or into the machta. Otherwise, if you spilled it, you'd have to start over again, because it's the equivalent of the tzavar behema, as if it went the blood directly to the floor. And that doesn't count. You have to start the whole process over again if it spilled down to the ground. That we leave as a teiku. Now, Ba'ir Rav Papa. So Rav Papa, again, questions within the context of chafina, which is chishev bechafinat ketoret mahu. He has a machshava, a machshevet psul. During the time of Chafina, the question is, what is the Adin? You can have a Machshava, for instance. If he says that I'm going to be Makriv this, Chutz Lizmano, or Chutz Limikomo, you can have all sorts of Machshavot that would spoil the Korban, if it were a Korban, or spoil the Mincha if it was a Mincha. We have from the Mishnayot in Menachot, we know that the Mincha is equated to the Zevach. So there's certain processes in the Mincha that we line up with the Avodot in the Zevach. On the Zevach, there are four main Avodot. There's the Shchita, there's the Kabbalat Adam, there's the Holachat Adam, and then there's Zrikat Adam. Those are the four primary Avodot with regards to a Zevach. The Gemara equates those to a Mincha. It says that the equivalent of Shchita by a Mincha is the Kometz. When your kometz, the mincha, that's the equivalent of shechita. When you put the kometz into a kli sharet, that's the equivalent of kabbalah tadam. When you molich the kometz to the mizbeach, that's the equivalent of holacha. And when you place the kometz on the mizbeach, when you maktir the kometz, that's the equivalent of zrikat adam. So within mincha, we have an equation or equivalence to zvachim. And just like the machshava is posel by a zevach, machshava is posel in the arba avodot that are equivalent in the mincha. So we know by a mincha, there's a process like equivalent of kometz that looks like shechita, and therefore a machshova will have impact. So the question here is chafina. Does chafina act in the same way? Chafina, we saw before, is somewhat similar to a kometz in the fact that you're taking with your hands out of a larger pile of ketoret, and that's what's going to designate what is going to go be mukrav. So if that's the case, is this evident where you can have machshova by the time of chafina? Mi amrin en yalif melo melo min mincha. Do we look, which was the Gemara's question earlier on, melo kumtzo and melo chofnav? Do we learn exeira shava from mincha? Mahata mahanya be machshava. Just like over there by mincha, the kometz can be affected by a machshava. Hachanami mahanya ba machshava. So to over here by the chafina, machshava will have impact. Although, or maybe not. Maybe it shouldn't. Now we have to ask the question before the Gemara yesterday, when Rav Papa asked the subsequent question with regards to equating between chafina and kometz, where it says, that's the same question you asked before. Why would you ask the same? Here, you're just asking me, do we have the Gzeira Shava or do we not have the Gzeira Shava? You asked that question once, then you asked it again a second time, so there the Gemara says, no, even within Chafina, there's a question, even if I didn't have the Gzeira Shava, I want to know within Chafina, v'lakach ve'vi. Does l'kikha modify? Do you have to take it intentionally or is it unintentionally okay? So that was the Gemara's question. Over here, the Gemara asks the question again, or basically what Pava's question again is, do we equate it to kometz? Do we learn this Gzeira Shava or not? Isn't that the same question he asked before? So Rashi says no, because there's a difference over here. This is a different type of question as compared to the questions that we asked before. Before, they were all one type of question, which is one reason. The bringing in of the chafina. What is the status of the bringing in of that chafina? One question is, do you have to have intent when you bring in the chafina? The other one is, can it be brought in with a kli, or does it have to be brought in with his hands? So the question is the same. It's all about moving the chafina from one location to the other location. What is the machshava or what is the methodology that you use? So that's one question. Here we have a totally different question, which is, this gzeira shava, does it help us with regards to machshava? Which is, you could say, that I don't use the gzeira shava to equate chafina and kometz for the methodology or for the hava'a, because I have those listed out in the psukim, maybe a little differently. But over here by machshava, we might learn the gzeira shava. So there is a way that you could separate these two issues. Before, you wouldn't be able to separate the issues. So it would force you to have to answer yes or no for both of them. Over here, this issue might be totally separate or far enough away from the other that it makes a difference. And therefore, the question that can stand as an independent question from the other questions. And then the Gemara says, Amale Rav Shimi Barashi, the Rav Papa. Rav Shimi Barashi answers Rav Papa, Tashma. Hosif Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva added on, it's Mishnah 88, the Solet HaKetoret HaLevona VaGichalim. If a tvuyom touches a portion of them, then he's posel the entire thing. We would think now, since tvuyom makes it pasul nami belina. That means that it has kedushat aguf. That's kedushat aguf, then there's a problem of leaving it over past its designated time. And if lina is problematic, leaving it past its designated time, then Pasla nami makshava, makshavet lina should also be a problem. Let's start with the Mishnah in Idiot and work our way through this. First of all, the Mishnah in Idiot says that within Kodesh, amale bekodesh, this is unique to Kodesh, which is that you have disparate objects. Generally in Tumah, if you have disparate objects, and if you touch one object, that object becomes Tameh. It conveys the Tumah to the next object, but it drops down a level. So if that next level is not high enough to convey the tumah, then it stays with this object, doesn't affect the other objects. So if you have a pile of cucumbers that are together and you touch one of the cucumbers, then that might become tameh, but in order for it to pass tumah to the next cucumber, it has to be a high enough level of tumah that can pass it. If to the third cucumber again. Successive conveyance of tumah, one object to the next. There's a din with regards to kodesh, that a kli mitzarfan, that a kli makes them into one unit. So I, for instance, if I have a pan full of coals, I have a pan full of ketoret. So here you're talking about objects that are disparate. They're unique and dependent objects. So the coals, each coal is a separate item. So technically if I touch one coal, then in terms of tumah, that coal could become tameh, and then it can convey that tumah to the next object and so on and so forth, if it has a high enough level of tumah. Well, Rabbi Akiva says a kli mitzarfan. The kli makes them into a single object. Thereby, if you touch one of the coals, they all become tamei if you touch the entirety of all the coals. Same is true by the ketoret. If you touch one granule of ketoret, technically that's a disparate item, and therefore, if it can pass on tumah, you'd have to pass it piece by piece to the next thing. Here he says kli mitzarfan makes them into one unit. If you touch one part of it, it affects the whole thing. In addition to that, these objects are not ochel. These objects are not ra'ui le'achila. So technically they should not be mikabel tumah whatsoever. So the other issue is that they're mekabel tumah because of chibat hakodesh, and therefore they are elevated to the equivalent of ochel, and they are able to be mekabel tumah. So these are items here that we're listing that normally should not be mekabel tumah because they're not ra'ui le'achila. They don't have a function that allows them to become tamei. Secondarily, they're objects that should be unique, and their passing of tumah should convey it in a progressive manner, not in a one shot. So Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, number one, they are mekabel tumah, and number two is the kli mitzarfan. If they're in a single kli, then it joins them together, become one unit. That's the Mishnah in Ediyot. What's important from that Mishnah in Ediyot is that if a tvul yom touches them, he makes them pasul, he ruins them. A tvul yom, again, as a tamei, can only affect the objects in Kodesh once they have kedushat haguf. There are two different levels of kedushah. For instance, if you're maktisha mincha, those objects that are kodesh are what we call kedushat damim. If something goes wrong with them at that point in time, you can redeem them. You can exchange them out. There is a way to deal with them because they only have kedushat damim. Once you place them into a kli sharet, they're elevated to kedushat haguf. It means now they have inherent kedushah that, first of all, cannot be removed. And number two is, it now opens it up to additional disqualifications. Those disqualifications are, first of all, if a tvul yom touches it, it becomes tamei, and it's ruined. Number two is, if you leave it overnight at this point, it's ruined. You can't do it, that's lina. So you have all these additional psulim that enter in once it reaches the level of kedushat haguf. So what Rabbi Akiva says over here is that these items all now are subject to tumat tvul yom. Well, subject to tumat yom is like a code word. If it's subject to tvul yom, that means it has kedushat haguf. Well, if it has kedushat haguf, usually when you're talking about kedushat haguf, we're talking about tvul yom, and it comes with a package. It means that tvul yom is problematic, lina is problematic, and then makshevet psul can affect it. So then what he says is here, listen, all Rabbi Akiva says in the Mishnah is that it has now subject to the tumah of tvul yom. So what he wants to do is extrapolate from that. Well, subject to the tumah of tvul yom, that means that it has kedushat haguf. Well, if it has kedushat haguf, then normally that means it's subject to lina, being left overnight. Well, if it's subject to lina overnight, then lina can happen in one of two ways. You actually leave it overnight, or you have a machshava to leave it overnight, and normally that's enough to be posel. But kedushat haguf, once you've reached kedushat haguf, then there can be psol, right, there's psol, tvul yom, lina, and pigol. Those three items now can affect the object. And that's what Rav Shimi Barashi says to Rav Papa, now that I know this pasul yidei tvul yom becomes tamei adol yitvul yom, that now enters me into the world of kedushat haguf. The world of kedushat haguf means that psul machshava is available there or can be effective over there. In the list is ketoret. He says, look, there you go, there's your answer. Ketoret has a din in machshava. That's the answer that he gives. Rashi asks a question here, which is fikashali. So I don't understand why Rav Shimi Bar Ashi brought such a complicated proof. It says, why doesn't he just go to the Mishnah and Me'ilah? And the Mishnah Me'ilah says openly, kometz, faktoret, uminchat koanim, mo'alim behen mishuk tushu. There is Me'ilah once they become Kodesh. Kachubikli. If you put them into a kli sharet, hukshu li pasel b'tvuyom, ube mechusar kipurim, ube lina. Once you put them into a kli sharet, then they take on the higher status of dusha. Tvuyom affects them. Lina affects them. So here you have an explicit Mishnah that says Torah is affected by lina. So if Torah is affected by lina, then certainly you could go extend it to Makshevet lina. He could skip one of the steps that he had with Rabbi Akiva's Mishnah. Rabbi Akiva's Mishnah, he says, oh, Tvuyom, that means there's lina, then there's Makshevet lina. Just go to the Mishnah Me'ila. Mishnah Me'ila already tells you there's lina. If there's lina already, all you have to do is now make the jump to Makshava. It's much easier. Why didn't he do it? Rashi just leaves it. He has no answer. He says, I don't understand why they didn't go to that Mishnah in Me'ilah. Tosafot, this is what this large Tosafot is about, says that he thinks that Rashi's question, or the premise of Rashi's question, is wrong. That is because the ketoret that they're speaking about in the Mishnah Me'ilah is not the ketoret of Yom HaKippurim, but at the everyday ketoret. And his reasoning is such that When it comes to that Mishnah Milah, it says once you put it into a Kli Sharet. He says that a Kli Sharet is true by every other day of the year except Yom HaKippurim. By Yom HaKippurim, by Kli Sharet, is not necessarily necessary by the Ketoret, because really you should be taking it with his hands directly. The only reason we put it into a spoon is because Yefshar. So he says that type of Kli Sharet may not have the same value or power as a normal Kli Sharet, because it's only here to be functional, to help us out, not to be mikadesh the ketoret. That's why I said to you before, when you mentioned the spoon, Tosafot makes that differentiation. If you look in the last line of Tosafot, towards the end, it says, viratirets, daidahotam ikalameimar, that which is over there, the airi viktoret the cholashana. That ketoret in mi'ilah, it's talking about the ketoret the rest of the year. The chashiva kidush kli didal, if sule bitvuyom, umabchusar kipurim abelina. Because there, when you put it into the kli, it affects the ketoret, because there, that's the process by which you take the ketoret on a daily basis into the kodesh, to the mizbeach zahav. But aval ketoret de yom hakipurim delo chashiva kiddush kli dida. The kiddush kli of yom hakipurim is not so significant. De minadin havalan lemeimar shelo tei bekli. Truthfully, it shouldn't have been in a kli. El na'al b'chufna, we should take it in with his hands. El mishum delo efshar. The only reason we permit it is because so maybe the Kli here does not function the same way that a Kli does in the other situation. So what he does is he goes to Rabbi Akiva. And where Rabbi Akiva, who doesn't speak about the Kli, is Mekadesh them, but simply that the Kli is Posel. So over there he says that's a Chibat HaKodesh, that's something that could extend even to the Ketoret of Yom HaKippurim. So because of that, he says that's maybe why the Gemara did not entertain the Mishnah in Mi'ilah and went after the Mishnah in Idiot in order to find its solution. Because the Mishnah Milah, you could argue, does not apply to Yom HaKippurim, because there's no real Kli Sharet, or Kiddush B'Kli Sharet, with regards to Yom HaKippurim. It's a necessary evil by Yom HaKippurim that we have to use the spoon, not because we need to, or not because it's necessary, not because you need to make Kadesh B'Kli Sharet. So that's Tosafot, dealing with this question that Rashi raises, of how do you deal with this question of why we had a much easier solution from the Mishnah Milah. Alright, so now, Bayro Papa. Chishe v'chatiyat v'chalim mahu. He has machshava at the time that he's scooping out the coals. What's the din? Machshire mitzvah ke mitzvah damo. Here, the coals are not the mitzvah itself. Mitzvah is the ketoret. The coals are just a machshir or an enabler. You can only burn the ketoret if you have coals. The mitzvah is the ketoret itself, and placing the ketoret on the coals. So that's prerequisite of getting the coals. Can you have a machshava there that it's posel? Machshire mitzvah ke mitzvah damo alo. Teiku. We leave that as an unresolved issue. Now, the question here can be one of two questions. Rashi says, what machshav are we speaking about? He takes out the coals. Can he be machshav ba'avuda? Rashi's first interpretation is, if you have a machshav by the coals, about the ketoret. So, is it a part of the avoda to the point which a machshav there can affect the ketoret? That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is the machshav about the coals can ruin the coals. Not ruin the ketoret, but ruin the coals themselves. So, Rashi brings both. So then he says, well, now that we know that Lina is Posel, because we know that Tvuyom is Posel by the Toret, then we assume that Machshava does have impact by the Chafina, how far does that Machshava extend? Does it extend to also to the Kol? So for instance, in this situation, when we said before, like the Mincha has clear parallels to the Zevach. In the Mincha, the Kmitza is the equivalent of Shechita. The putting into the Kli Sharet is equivalent of Kabbalat Adam. The Olacha is the same. The Akhtara is the equivalent of Zrikat Adam. By the Chafinah, we don't exactly have all of those parallels. So is the process of bringing the Chafinah in, including taking the coals, does that now become somewhat parallel to a Zevach or a Mincha? That these are part of the processes, and therefore they take on a Shem Avoda. Now, once you have an Avoda, we just discussed before, that there is such thing as a Psul Lina, Psul Tvuyom, and Machshava by the Chafinah. So how far does that extend? Is that only to the Chafinah itself? When you chofen, when you actually take it out, or does that extend to the bringing of the coals as well? So that's the question. The Gemara, it's built. It's almost like an Imtim Tzalomar. Once we've solved the problem that there is Machshava by Chafinah, how far does that extend? Once you're involved in Machshava and Chafinah, are the coals a part of that process? Is that only for Chafinah? How do I do it? Because I don't have an exact parallel to Zevach or Mincha in this case, because it doesn't work exactly the same way as it does by Mincha or Zevach. So that Gemara leaves as a teiku unresolved. Bami nemi Rav Sheshet. Halacha b'smol mahu. This is your question yesterday, which is, if you carry it on your left hand, what's the din? A couple of lefties in the shir. So Amar lo Rav Sheshet Tinitua. It's our Mishnah. Netala temachta bimino, vetekap bismulo. Carried in the coals in his right hand, and he carried in the ketoret in his left hand. Well, he's carrying it with his left hand, and it says it's fine. So here you see that halacha with your left hand is considered to be halacha. And that's okay. We'll get back to why there's a question here. V'nifsha lehu mehad etnan. Why don't you answer from this? We have an explicit mission which says, haregel sheyamin bismol. The right leg he puts in his left hand, ubeit orala chutz, and the sealed part is outward, part where they sliced it off. The animal, that's facing in towards him, he covers it up under his arm or where he's holding it, because that's derech kavod mala, not to show the chatach, or the bloody part on the outside. He shows the hoof, that S section on the outside, and the cut pieces towards his inside. So over there, he's carrying the right leg, the right hind leg, he's carrying that in his left hand. He's carrying the rosh in his right arm, and he's carrying the leg in his left hand. So you see again that carrying with your left hand is fine. Where it says, imi atam, if it was from over there, havamina hane mile holacha. That was, of regard to holacha, duom akva kapara. That's not ma'akev the kapara. Zrikat adam is the ikar part of the korban. Once you've done zrikat adam, the kapara is accomplished. Putting of the pieces of the korban onto the mizbeach, that is the mitzvah. That's the proper way to do it. That's a chadchila, b'diavad, if you don't put them on. You're still mitkaper. The korban works because the dam got to the mizbeach. So maybe over there, by the, that type of holacha, we say that the left hand is not me'akev. And that's why it works over there. Lo, we're talking about holacha that really is in the process of the integral part of the korban. Maybe over there it would not work. Mashmulon, that we bring it from the ketoret. Here the ketoret is the main part of it. The ketoret is what accomplishes what you're doing. When you go lifnei mifneim, the gechalim are, as we said before, makshirei mitzvah. They're just the enabler of you to burn the ketoret inside. The fact that you're carrying the ketoret in your left hand proves that even something that's ma'akiv kapara is allowed to be carried in your left hand. So Rashi asks over here, what's the question? We know, with regards to kohanim and the mikdash, they have to do all the avodah with their right hand. And right is ma'akiv. And if you do it with your left hand, it's no good. So why is the Gemara all of a sudden here have starting to entertain the possibility of doing things with your left hand? So it says, if you look carefully, the questions here are only about one of the avodot. We said before that there are four avodot with regards to a korban. There is the shkitat korban, there is the kabbalat adam, there's the holachat adam, and then the zrikat adam. He says that by kabbalat adam and zrikat adam, there the Torah says kohen. In etzba, it means automatically that it has to be your right hand. So we have a limud from the pasuk. The psukim tell us that that's the din with regards to these avodot that are explicitly mentioned. Those avodot that are explicitly mentioned, they have the word kohen, they have the word yad or etzba. We know that that means yamin, because the stam yad or stam etzba in the Torah means the right hand. The question is by holacha. Holacha, there is no explicit pasuk that tells about holacha. The avodah of holacha is learned from the word v'ikrivu. The fact that it says v'ikrivu, chazal darvzin from v'ikrivu means to bring it closer to the mizbeach. So the Gemara learns from that that holacha is a form of avodah, but it's learned out of this word v'ikrivu. So that's where the Gemara has a question now. That hikrivu that we're learning out, what are the parameters of that hikrivu? Now, it's learned out from the Kabbalat Adam, so maybe it should be compared to Kabbalat Adam, just like Kabbalat Adam requires right, so does the Holachat Adam. Or maybe Holachat Adam, because it's an independent avoda, and we have other examples of Holacha, where it can be done with the left hand, maybe by taking it in the left hand, it'd be okay. So the Gemara's question is very narrow, about one specific thing, which is this Holacha, which is all, quote-unquote, the halacha l'moshe misinai. It's a mesorah that the word ikrivu means halachat adam, even though that's not the pashtut of pasuk. That's a limud. But since it's a limud, we don't have an explicit kohen or yad or etzba mentioned by it. So now, the question of right comes up all of a sudden because you're in a different world. You're in a world of an abstract limud, not a limud that has specific designation in the Torah with the word kohen, yad or etzba. So now, right and left all of a sudden become a question. And that's why the question is posed here with the left, only in this context of holacha. And again, we bring the proof from our Mishnah, which is holacha does work with the left. And this will be the exception to the rule, not the paradigm. Everything else will require right. The exception to the rule is that by holacha, you can use your left hand. Now, holacha is unique as an avoda in other places. The Gemara in Zvachim deals with this, which is, do you have to do holacha? There's a possibility of being makriv korban without ever doing any holacha. Have you shecht it close enough to the mizbeach and do the kabbalat adam right there? You could do the zrika, you could do the sprinkling without ever doing holacha. So that's there as a machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim with regards to holacha, how we look at holacha, because there's a possibility of doing it without holacha. So holacha has a unique status, unique standing in halacha. Number one is, it may not be necessary. It may not be ma'akev, the ability to do the korban. Number two is, it's a limud, it's not explicit pasuk, it's learned out of a limud from the word v'ikrivu that teaches us that halacha applies here. That's a Torah Shebaal Peh. So for all those reasons, halacha might have a different status or a different requirements than the other avodot. And that's why the Gemara here is specifically chasing after halacha with regards to the left hand. And the Gemara concludes that that's okay, that you can use your left hand for halacha, because we have evidence of that in other places within halacha. Halacha tevarim. The Gemara says it's not good enough proof because that's not ma'akev kapara. And then the Gemara brings our Mishnah, which is halacha ketoret, where it is ma'akev kapara. So you have two examples of using the left hand, one when you're not ma'akev, one where you are ma'akev kapara, and we see that it's fine. So therefore, halacha can be done with your left hand. Okay, we'll stop over here.